DW Africa Link.
In this episode, we will try to break the cycle by confronting Liberia's growing Kush crisis head on. Today, we are asking the hard questions. How did this cheap high become a nationwide menace? And what will it take to break the grip of Kush on our communities? Liberia, it's time to talk solutions. Stay tuned. My name is Josie Mahachi. Welcome to Africa Link, the podcast that connects you to the stories that matter from Africa.
Africa Link, every weekday here on DW.
Let me start by explaining what this deadly drug Kush is. Kush is a synthetic drug that is components of marijuana. Unlike natural cannabis, Kush's effects are often far more potent and unpredictable, leading to extreme agitation, hallucinations, aggression, seizures, and even severe health risks like organ damage or death. Kush has become a major public health crisis in Liberia, especially among young people. Over the past year, many disadvantaged youths have developed large sores on their legs, some even requiring amputation, and others have lost their lives. While users report never experiencing sores with other drugs, Kush is leaving young men in a state of standing sleep, in quotes, hooked and harmed. An urgent solution is needed. But what exactly? Joining me to discuss more is DW's Liberia correspondent, Evelyn Pade, and Dr. Emmanuel Flomo, a psychiatrist at Redemption Hospital in Liberia.
Looking at dealing with patients, I think it's widespread within Moruga and its immediate surrounding. There might be likelihood that it spreads throughout the country, but I cannot say to what extent it has spread throughout the country. But what I know about Moruga and its environment, it is widely used.
And Evelyn, you are a reporter on the ground. Can you also elaborate more on this? We need to really understand how widespread it is.
So what is happening right now is that the Kush drugs, since it came in, it has become one of the cheapest. I have had the opportunity to speak with drug users, young boys and girls, and we asked them, why is it that all of you are going after the Kush? They even get Kush as simple as for 100 Liberian dollars. So that's like 52 cents. So that's how cheap it is. So anybody can just easily handle a 100 Liberian dollars. So they get money faster, it's cheaper, and they can easily have it. So a lot of them now, because of the, you know, the economic strain that is attached to drug abuse, right? They're always, the users, especially the young people, will always want to go for the cheapest one, the one that is quickly, easily accessible. So you see young girls, you see young boys, they are all on Kush.
Now to you, Emmanuel, can you describe the typical progression of these sores that we hear about from their onset to the more severe stages such as amputation or even death?
So generally, people that will see that using substance, normally it starts with a recreational use. We found out that they want to know what it is, the peer group tell you that this drug is okay, they want to use it and what have you. Initially, it starts at that point. Now, let me say this. All of these guys who are using substance, most likely they did not start using substance because they wanted to be addicted or they anticipated being disbarred. So it starts with regional use, habitual use, and then over the period of time, it progresses to the most severe cases where you found some of them in the streets and all of these things. However, there are a whole lot of factors that might play in some of these things, where they are located, where they are situated, the socioeconomic burden, parental guardians, and even the availability of some of these substances predispose young people to using substances.
And Evelyn, you say that you actually did a report and met some of these youth that are using this kush. Did you see any source, and what can you say about this? Just to find out also, has the Liberian government or any international health organizations taken any steps to address this growing crisis?
All right, so I will take the first question. What I have seen, my colleague and I, Cyrus Hamo, we have documented drug users who, on their stories, they told us the difference when they were on the other drug called, they got different names, right? They got a cocoa, they got a regular marijuana, then they got other drugs. So this is what we will always ask them. Right now, what's happening to you with this new kush and this other drug at the time it was there, and when you had this other kind of drug? They would tell you that when we were taking this other drug, it was like this, but since we started taking this one, this is what we are experiencing. So the problem in Liberia is data. Data is a big part of our problem in our journalism that we do. Even if you want to find data to know most recent, for example, maternity rate, or you want to know how many Liberians don't have access to internet, we almost practically have to create our own data. We did a story about how climate change is driving migration. We could not find any data, how many Liberians. So we had to do a random survey, talking to farmers of 50 per each county, under the age of 40 and 40 and above. That's how we got the data, that we got one in every 10 wanting to migrate because of climate change and our farms are failing. So the issue of data, you know, the doctor keeps talking about, it's true, you will not find the data, but we're in the field. When you talk to them, when you hear their stories, and practically, I could see their legs and everything. So they said, well, on this other drug, this, we're not experiencing what we are having, but next world, this is what we are experiencing. So I had a situation right next to my house where a boy, you could see the bones. And most times they would tell that story. They always, especially when they reach to that stage where they feel that they're almost giving up. That was one story. He died and he was buried just right in our neighborhood at the back. There's a little graveyard. He was buried there. Another incident was just next in the same neighborhood, two incidents. So hearing their stories, and then the interview we have with young girls who are into commercial sex, I'm interviewing them. I'm seeing the rashes and everything on their skin. So I'll always be curious, wanting to know what is happening. So one of them said to me, I don't know, they're cool drugs. Since we started taking it, it come like a little rash, like just a little piece and a little rashes, you know. And when they burst it, it turns into soul, and it will keep getting enlarged. Like he said, they don't have medication. They don't look after their health. It gets bigger. So I have talked to a lot of them based on those stories.
But don't you think what Dr. Emmanuel was saying could make sense, whereby he says it could be the way they actually inject themselves with these drugs. And from there, you know, if you use the same syringe,
It could be a factor. Yeah. It could be a factor. The only thing, when you ask a drug user, they don't have a better way to explain it to you.
Yeah.
But they can be able to tell you the difference when they were taking a particular drug at a particular time, how it treated them. They will even explain to you how, when you take the drug, the kush, you don't even feel like eating. So they will always tell you, because they are doing it, they know.
Yeah. But let's just find out how the government is acting now. Yeah.
So, I just want to give a little background a little bit. So when the president, the new government, took over in January this year, the president, during his inauguration speech, or, you know, he talked about the fight against drugs. Then on the 30th of January, he, you know, declared drugs a national emergency, which meant that every hand's on deck. Then he didn't stop there. He asked for the setting up of a steering committee. That steering committee comprising the Ministry of Health, the Ministry of Justice, co-chaired by the Ministry of Youth and Sports, the Ministry of Gender, Children and Social Protection, and the Ministry of Finance, including the Liberia Drugs Enforcement Agency. So that steering committee work was to go back, plan, come about with strategies that the government should put into place to be able to crack down on this thing. Real life, people are asking, so how far is this committee work? So he took some steps, but people are saying it's not good enough. Now, setting a committee, declaring, you know, drugs a national emergency is good, but the real practical action to be able to curb this menace, that's where many civil society organizations are concerned. And then, in addition to that, when the president's recent speech at the UN General Assembly in the United States, at the 78th Assembly on September 25th, he called and brought this thing to the attention of the United Nations that Liberia is facing a drug crisis and it's affecting the young people, jeopardizing this country, you know, the country's future. It's a pandemic, he said to the United Nations. So it's a concern the government is trying to fight it. But in terms of the reality on what to do, there were a lot of people are still concerned, including myself. So in the past time, we've seen a number of raids. The Liberia Drugs Enforcement Agency has been raiding some places. Recently, there were a court verdict that found 10 persons guilty, you know, for being in possession of illegal drugs. The Fifth Judicial Circuit Court in Grand Cape Mount County convicted four persons to 10 years in prison. That is real. We haven't had of recent, right, of from the past regime to now, just within the time they were fading off, to see such a big step being taken. So yes, so that is thing of the legal aspect. Recently, they made some good strides where four drug dealers who were in possession of 1.5 million plus worth of drug were finally convicted, went through the due process, and then they were handed guilty and sentenced to 10 years in prison. That was a good step. But a lot more still needs to be done.
And Dr. Flomo, do you think the government is doing enough from what Evelyn just said?
Yes. So before I respond to that question, Evelyn may mention about people using Kush, and then they talk about their experiences of rashes on the skin or so. Like it comes like a blister and all of these things. Now, if you look at, because they reported that they were using some other drugs like the cocoa, the tar, and then they started using Kush. So I would just want to provide a bit of information about the Kush drug. The Kush people take, we are inclined to believe that it's a cocktail, which means people mix it with a whole lot of other drugs, because the effect that we see is not purely of cannabis or synthetic cannabis. So that needs to be investigated to know what it is also, but there has not been any investigation in Liberia. So we temporarily do some tests like the drug urine toxicology, but then having a positive result has determinant if the person is a heavy user, how frequent do they use, and then the duration. There's a whole lot of things that come into play as it relates to that. So people who use Kush that we report, they use Kush. We found out that when we do some drug urine tests for them, you found out that you found a whole lot of different substances within that. At times you see marijuana will be there. At times you have some opioids present. At times you have some other drugs that are present within that Kush. So is Kush actually just synthetic cannabis, or does it entail that we need to do a more qualitative research to know what it entails? So now with the rashes on the skin, yes, it makes a whole lot of sense now. I don't know if it is Kush are causing it, or it's a long duration that they have had an impaired immune system. Now they're having blister bursting, and then you find out that the place gets infected. Medically, they call that cellulitis.
Maybe on this particular part, we'll need to have a part two of this discussion to really find out what it is.
What it is, exactly. Yes.
But let's just move ahead with the discussion. I was just wondering if you think the government is doing more.
So, yes, as it relates to the government, I will speak from the health perspective, because I don't know much about policies and what have you, but I think the government is making some efforts. So as I said, the previous government launched an IRIGZU project last year. Me, along with some other doctors who are in the field, we work along with a whole lot of other people. Now, the issue is alarming, and then government needs help. So they launched the IRIGZU project. I think there was some funding that was put into the budget at that period of time to see how best they could take some of these guys from the street and process them to the rehabilitation phase. So there are so many other facilities that provide care for some of these people. But then people who are severely ill, now there is only one mental health hospital to cater to a whole lot of conditions, including substance use issues, especially people who have severe substance use issues. Now, as Evelyn said, the government has, the president launched during his first State of the Nation address, he declared substance use as a national emergency. However, the Ministry of Health, from what I've what I know, is making some frantic effort. Government facility alone cannot cater to all of these guys. Now, these people who are providing care, who have all the facilities to provide care, what they tend to do is to build the capacity to help fight this endemic in Liberia, the issues about substance use in Liberia. So currently, I'm in a training that we have people from all backgrounds that they are training people in substance use disorder. And then this training, it covers substance use, the treatment, the prevention, and recovery. And this training has been funded by WHO.
Yeah, okay. However, just because we're running out of time, Dr. Flomo, are there any rehabilitation programs or interventions specifically aimed at Kush users that have shown promise? I mean, besides the training that you are going through now,
Process, I know. I was saying they have other places that people are providing some bit of rehabilitation services, but is it optimal? Now, people have to be trained to provide optimal services for some of these guys. So that is what the ministry is doing. I cannot speak wholly and solely for the Ministry of Health because I'm not there making the policy also, but these are some of the efforts I've seen that the government is taking towards fighting substance use.
Okay. Yeah. Now, Evelyn, just for us to wrap up, from a journalist's point of view, do you believe this issue has received enough media attention, and what challenges have you faced in trying to report on it?
Yes, it has received a lot of attention and even media coverage. The only challenge I see right now is the reality of getting the data. The issue of illicit drug is entrenched in all of our counties, the 15 counties. There is no county that is left out. So what is needed right now is one, government should be able to have a clear data, the Ministry of Health, on what we have on hand. Two, even the budget that go to the Liberia Drug Enforcement Agency, the government needs to be real serious in terms of budgetary allocation, and they need to follow those service providers, whether they're local NGOs or philanthropic groups that are working with drugs affected youth, to be able to see if the money they are giving is worth what the returns are in terms of the transformation of people. For me, I'm one person in my work that I do as a journalist. I say these workshops are not bad, these trainings are not bad, but let's see the return of the real changes taking place. We had a problem where I did a story on former child soldiers for the team DW Africa, who were hooked on drugs during the war. And after the war, what are their lives like? So the Ministry of Youth and Sports, in partnership with another NGO, got a funding to be able to rehabilitate drug users. Guess what? Do you know where they were having the rehab meeting with these young people? It's just in the same location in Red Light, Gobachop, in the dam of where the drug center is. And trust me, The findings were so staggering that the very young people will tell you, they say we're doing rehabilitation, but we see the skill training, some of them, even the skills training, after the skills training, you see them go right back to the ghetto and the rehab center or the coaching and counseling is still in the same location. You not even detoxify them. You need to first detoxify, change the location, have them rehabilitated in a different new location. I mean, there's a big challenge, to be honest, in fighting this thing. The government needs to be real serious in terms of budgetary commitment. And institutions that are receiving government money or international donor money, they should be able to align it with the changes and the impact.
Dr. Emmanuel Flomo, a psychiatrist at Redemption Hospital in Liberia, and DW's Liberia correspondent Evelyn Pade, many thanks for joining us. At the Africa Link podcast, we always look across the continent to see how the stories and issues we are dealing with play out or at times even overlap. We now head to South Africa, another country that has issues to do with drugs. In the Johannesburg suburb of Coronationville, drug and alcohol abuse among youths is rife, and the larger Gauteng province has the highest number of drug rehabilitation admissions in South Africa. Some students and counselors have their own history of gang membership and drug abuse and are trying to curb gang activities and addiction in schools across Gauteng. We now hear from Wendell Lowe from Fear Free Life. So Wendell, tell us, how does the drug and alcohol abuse problem in Gauteng compare to the rest of South Africa?
Drugs and alcohol, the rate is very high here in my community, here in Johannesburg, in Westbury. Westbury is one of the major locations where the drugs is being sold. In schools, every second house, parents are crying. And drugs plays a major role in gangsterism. The drug lords now shooting each other for drug corners, you know, for drug lolly lounges and that. For territory, who's selling there and there. So this thing is very, it's epidemic now, because every day two, three boys are shooting each other, killings happening daily. And so far, young mothers, teenage pregnancies on the rise, and children growing up without proper mothers, proper fathers. The grannies took care of them, others raised themselves by the mercy and grace of God. So gangsterism, it's very high in our community, same as drugs. It's all drug related, it's gang related. They go hand in hand, they are partners. In this place where we're staying, in all the African countries, drugs is not so much, because here by us, it's all the nations. Foreigners is here, Nigerians, Zimbabweans, Tanzanians, Ethiopians, everywhere. Everyone is this side, so it's much easier for them to sell and do human trafficking, and everything is drug related and that, and this thing come, and this thing is a very big problem.
And as someone who is trying to curb these gang activities and addiction across Gauteng, what personal stories have you heard from the youth you have counseled?
Yeah, one of the learners did open to me and tell me the story that a friend invited to a friend's house. And when they get there, they give her the 8 Milans and cough mixture mixed with cold drink. They offer the cold drink to drink. 1, 2, 3, she was knocked out. The next best thing, she was gang raped and everything. And the major problem is I meet other boy through drugs. The drug lord told him he must keep this parcel. He's gonna buy him a pair of Nike and Jordan techies, which he come from a poor household. So after that, a drug lord give him the drugs to keep by his house to stash it there. Furthermore, it became his career. So he don't go to school anymore. Just stand in a corner selling drugs for us, drug lord. And he escalated. Now he's no more keeping it, he's selling it. So that's how big the problem is. And daily, and people is killing each other just to sell drugs. They say it's a career now. It's a business, legit business. Yeah, you get over-counter drugs, illegal drugs, and illegal drugs is very dangerous.
And in your opinion, are there enough rehabilitation places available for the youth in the Gauteng area?
The problem with rehabilitation centers, we have, there's not much in this area where I am in Gauteng. And those who are there is full, and others are most expensive, and the government ones, you must have all those protocol and laws. You must go to the clinic, and then you must be an outpatient for 21 days until they find an open space for you. So there's no rehabilitation, and it's a big problem in our community.
Now, in case there are also some South Africans listening right now and would want to reach out, what issues does your organization face when it comes to rehabilitation, and how can they reach out to you?
We as organization, MPOs, we are struggling to put people into rehabs, because rehabs that are available with immediate help, you must have some money, and we are a non-profit organization. We rely on funds and sponsors and donations. So, but I hope and pray that God can open up doors for us so that we can help them. And I do believe there is a way out of drugs and gangsterism and this thing spiritually.
Thanks a lot, Vandel Lou, for joining us here on DW Africa Link podcast. Now that's it for this edition of Africa Link. Remember, you are not just a listener, but a part of our community, and your engagement can shape the direction of our discussions. We value your insights and encourage you to share your thoughts with us. Remember to follow so you can catch all of the Africa Link podcast episodes. This podcast was co-produced and edited by Isaac Mugabi. My name is Josie Mahachi. Thanks for listening. Until next time, it's bye for now.
DW, made for minds.